So, how do you like your coffee? Hands up, like, who drinks coffee? Right. A lot of people, except for the young ones. How do you like it? Flat white, espresso, long black, cappuccino, latte, macchiato, affogato. How do you like it? Full cream, skim, light milk, almond milk, coconut milk, single pasture, organic or grass-fed cow milk, goat's milk, small or medium or large, or piccolo or jumbo, like single shot, double shot, sugar, no sugar, stevia, natvia, equal. I'm out. I think that's it. Oh, when do you like it? Do you like it in the morning? Do you like it in the arvo? Do you like it? Now, is that coffee in there, Steve? No. Dave?
It's actually tea.
Oh, tea.
Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Do you like Earl Grey? Do you like English breakfast, peppermint, oolong, jasmine? You get the picture, right? We've got a lot of choice. We have a lot of choice. And you get to pick whatever you want, and that's the best, right? I like single shot flat white almond milk, and not after 1 p.m, please. That's my choice.
You're not picky.
What do you guys have? What is it that you like? Because when it comes to coffee, you get to pick whatever you want. With some things, more is better. Like if you order 6 nuggets and you get 7, that's better. That's very better, very better. If you buy 3 tyres for your car and you get 1 free, that's awesome. But when it comes to coffee, more isn't better. What's better is exactly what I want. I want a single shot flat white almond milk, not after 1 p.m. If I order a single shot and I get a double shot, that's bad. If I order lactose-free skim milk, I'll get full cream. It's very bad. Right? So when it comes to coffee, you want to get exactly what you asked for. And not even Starbucks can tell you differently. Last year, there was a class action lawsuit against Starbucks. Because, well, class action, so not one, but many people, said that there was too much ice in their iced coffee. So they sued Starbucks. I don't know if they won, it's probably still going. But they sued Starbucks because there was too much ice in their iced coffee. And the framework of our world supports it, right? It lets us choose exactly what we want, and it tells us that what we want exactly is what's best. Especially when it comes to coffee, but really in every part of our lives. If we could customize our lives like we could customize coffee, we would. If we could customize our messiahs like we could customize coffee, we would. This isn't a new phenomenon. As we just read, the Jews in this passage were the same. They had a type of messiah that they wanted. They wanted the conquering type of messiah, the one that would come into Jerusalem and drive out the Romans. That's the type they wanted. So verse 22, it's the festival of dedication, otherwise known as Hanukkah. In the 2nd century BC, there was a Syrian king who ruled over Israel, and it was pretty harsh on them. And he desecrated the temple, and he dedicated it to Zeus. But then up rose a guy named Judah Maccabee, and he rose up an army of Jews to fight against the Syrian king, and he kicked the king out of Israel. And he dedicated the temple back to Yahweh, the God of Israel. And that's what they celebrate at Hanukkah. So Jesus is on the day of Hanukkah in the temple. And it was winter. Hanukkah's in winter, but that's probably not what John's saying. He's probably telling us a bit more than that. John writes really poetically in his sermons. So when he says it's winter, he's probably, I mean, it is winter, but he's probably saying it's a cold climate. Socially, politically, relationally, to Jesus, it's a cold climate. So Jesus walks into the temple on the day of the festival where they celebrate a Messiah-like figure and into a cold climate, and then the Jews surround him. And verse 24, they ask Jesus, are you the Messiah? Are you the guy that's come here to drive out the Romans? The Syrians are gone now, but the Romans are here. Are you going to drive them out? Are you the one that the prophets have talked about that's going to kick out Rome and restore Israel to greatness? Tell us clearly if you're the Messiah. And his answer, verse 25, I've already told you, but you just didn't believe me. You might think that the Jews here have a bad memory, or maybe John didn't record something, because Jesus said he already told them, so you believe him, he already told them. But if you flick back in John's gospel, you actually won't find Jesus telling them that he's the Messiah anywhere. He hasn't told them. If I was those Jews, I'd be a bit baffled, maybe even a bit annoyed. Like, is he just trolling us? I just asked you now, are you the Messiah? And he said, I told you before, but you didn't tell me before. Are you trolling me? He said, before I'm the bread of life. Before he said, I'm the living water. He said, I'm the light. But he's never said, I'm the Messiah. And then Jesus goes on and says even more. He says, not only have I told you, but I've shown you in the works that I've done in my Father's name. But he hasn't done that either. He's changed water into wine. He's healed people. He's fed 5,000 people. He's healed a blind man. But he hasn't done anything Messiah-y. He hasn't raised up an army. He hasn't killed any Romans. He hasn't freed any Jews. He hasn't done anything miraculously Messiah-y. And then he goes on and he blames the Jews. But you do not believe. He blames the Jews. What's going on? Is Jesus messing with their heads? He's just said, I've told you and I've shown you. He hasn't told them, he hasn't shown them. And then he blames the Jews for not believing. And then he goes on the tangent. He talks about sheep. You guys, you Jews who are standing in front of me are not my sheep. That's why you don't believe. Verse 27, my sheep hear my voice and they follow me. We kind of know what he's talking about because we've spent a few weeks in Ezekiel and we've spent a few weeks in John talking a lot about sheep and shepherds. He's saying that he's the good shepherd that was promised centuries ago by God. Because all the shepherds of Israel were bad, he's the good shepherd that was promised to come to give the covenant of peace that would last forever. If you haven't been here the past couple of weeks, the basic gist of it is that Israelite shepherds were bad and there's a king that's coming that would make things good forever. So that's why he says in verse 28, I give them eternal life. And never will they perish, and no one will ever snatch them out of my hand. So I'm not really sure what's going on in the mind of the Jews right now, but I think I'm sufficiently confused for the both of us. They've asked him, are you the Messiah? Easy yes or no question. Are you the Messiah? God's chosen one who's going to conquer Israel again, give it back to God. And he says, I've already told you, but he hasn't. He says, I've already shown you, but he hasn't. And then he goes and talks about sheep. So what's actually going on? Like, is Jesus really a troll? Like, honestly, like, you would think he is, and the only reason he'd say he's not is because he's Jesus, right? So you give him the benefit of the doubt. And you'd be wise to, because after the next verse, everything starts to click in and make sense. He said already, no one will ever snatch them out of my hand, verse 28. And then he adds to it, no one will ever snatch them out of God's hand, verse 29. So whose hand is the sheep in? Verse 30, it's in the hand of God and it's in the hand of Jesus and they're one in the same. I am the Father of one. That's his big claim. Yahweh, the God of the Jews, it says over and over in the Old Testament, is the only God there is. There is no other God. Probably the cornerstone verse of the Old Testament, especially for the Jews, the ones I will repeat multiple times daily, is Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. There's basically no one like God. There's only one God. He's unique. But Jesus slips himself into that verse. He says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God and I are one. It's an astronomical claim to Jews. And Jesus himself was a Jew. It's a huge claim. Imagine if I did that to you right now. If I said, you guys, you sheep of God, you're in my hands, and you're in Jesus' hands, and you're in God's hands. Hear, O 5C, the Lord your God and Jesus and I are one. It's too big a claim. You'd have to cut the sermon right here. Steve would like stand up.
Blasphemy.
Yes, and he'd pull his stoning stone out of his pocket, and then he'd start saying it, and then you'd all have to follow suit, right? It's just blasphemy. Those stones that you've been saving them up, you've been saving them for me. So possibly they've stoned him in verse 31 because of the blasphemy he commits. That's what they claim in verse 33. All along John's gospel, it's made really clear that Jesus and God are actually one. All his miracles prove it. Everything he says proves it as well and testifies to it. I've done nothing miraculous to show you any proof. Some of you guys saw me break my arm when I was a kid at Greenfield Park by running into a wall. I broke my arm. Like, nothing miraculous there. Some of you guys saw me break my knee at youth group by turning around. Nothing miraculous there. Some of you guys saw or even experienced with me the most horrendous diarrhea and constipation and diarrhea again in Vietnam, right? If there was a time for miracles, that was the time for miracles. And I would have done one if I could have done a miracle then. But I can't do miracles, and I haven't done miracles. But in John's Gospel, Jesus has done many miracles, right? And he's given at least enough proof for them to hear him out. Is he really one with God? But the Jews just stone him. Jesus wasn't the cup of coffee they ordered. They wanted a Messiah that would come in and conquer, and that wasn't what Jesus said he was. The Jews ask him if he's the Messiah, specifically the type of Messiah that they want. They want the one to reclaim Israel, and his answer to them is basically that he's more than the Messiah. Jesus is the one that brings abundant wine to the feast. He's the one that is the bread of life, the living water, the light, the good shepherd. And he claims that he's one with God himself. He's equal with God. Jesus claims he's more than the Messiah. And that's not what they wanted. They wanted the Messiah that would come and conquer, not the Messiah that's one with God. So they stoned him because they didn't get what they ordered. I order a flat white and I get a long black, I send it back. I get too much ice in my iced coffee, I sue Starbucks. I ask for a Messiah and I get someone who claims to be more than the Messiah, someone that claims to be one with God, I stone him. It's normal, right? Billions of people around the world reject Jesus because of his claims. He claims to be one with God, the Son of God, and they reject him. Even if you're a Christian now, at some point you've rejected Jesus. He wasn't the Messiah that you wanted. To us, it's normal to reject what you don't want. But it doesn't work that way when it comes to Jesus. Jesus breaks down the framework of how this world works, the one where you get to personalise and customise everything, and you only get one choice with Jesus. There's only one Messiah, and that's the one that's one with God. So when you hear his voice, when you come to Jesus, you get the choice to follow or not to follow, and there's nothing in between. So that's what's going on in the passage. The Jews ask Jesus if he's the Messiah, and he says, I'm more than the Messiah. I'm the one that's one with God. So what's it mean to us? It's almost like limitless what it could mean to us, right? But I'm just going to give you 2 points, one if you're a Christian, one if you're not a Christian. If you're already a follower of Christ, if you're a sheep that's heard his voice and followed him, I'm going to be pretty specific with this one because this is where it hit me, and it hit me last night actually. The thing is to pray about more than what you want, because Jesus is more than your Messiah. He's the Messiah of all of Australia, of Cambodia, of all the world, and he's the one that's one with God. So even if you're a Christian, as most of us might be here, we are still all in danger of making the same mistake that the Jews made. They were fixed on the Messiah that they wanted. They wanted a particular type of Messiah. But when the real Messiah came, they rejected him because they wanted their Messiah so much. They rejected the real one. And I think our prayers, or maybe our lack of prayers, exposes that in us. Last night, I was at a wedding with a couple of you guys as well, and I hadn't finished preparing this sermon. I was like struggling. I was thinking about this sermon all night, but I was at the wedding, so I couldn't write a thing. I had preacher's block or something. I don't know. The passage confused me. I didn't know where it was going. Jesus' answer didn't make sense. I was kind of siding with the Jews. I was like, they were just asking. Why don't you just say yes? So what did I do? Well, for the week leading up to this sermon, I worked really hard. I set aside time. I read. I reread. I thought. I wondered. But then the night leading up to the sermon, last night at the wedding, I prayed like I'd never prayed before. I wanted the Messiah of last minute sermons. I was like, God, Jesus, please help me. I've got a 30 minute sermon tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'm just going to be like rambling on. Save me. Save them. Save you guys from 30 minutes of wasted time. Save me from 30 minutes of embarrassment. Anything that would get God to send the Messiah of last minute sermons. When the cold meat and jellyfish dish came, I was like, Jesus, please help me with my intro. During the sea cucumber and abalone course, which is incidentally my least favourite course, I was like, please, help me to be clear tomorrow. Help me to have an idea about what's going on in the sermon. During the speeches, I was like, Jesus, yeah, who's got a speech tomorrow? It's me. Please help me. I was praying when I went to sleep. I was praying when I woke up in the middle of the night, go to the bathroom. I was constantly in prayer. It was awesome, but it was prayer just for me. I was concerned about me. I wanted God to send the Messiah of the thing that I wanted. I was praying just like the Jews. It's not bad to pray about these things, and God wants us to bring everything to him in prayer. But if all you're praying about is the stuff that you want, I think you've missed the point like the Jews missed the point. They wanted the Messiah that would conquer Israel, but Jesus was more than the Messiah. I wanted the Messiah that would deliver me a sermon at the last minute, but Jesus is more than that Messiah. He's the one that's one with God. So what do you guys pray about? When you're lying down to go to sleep, or when you wake up, or when you're stressed, what are you praying about? Are you praying about the things that you want? Do you just want God to be the Messiah of the thing that you want? That was me last night. That was really me last night. So have a look at your prayers, or your lack of prayers, and consider what that says about you, and what that exposes about what you're thinking on a deeper level. Are you more like the Jews than you really think you are? I was. I was doing this sermon for a full week before I realised that actually I'm really a lot like the Jews. So pray about more than what you want. Pray about everything. Everything that God has control over. Everything that Jesus has control over. Pray for Cambodia. Jesus is the Messiah of Cambodia as well. Jessica's seen it, so Jessica will pray for it. You guys haven't seen it, but still pray for it, because Jesus is the Messiah over Cambodia, and Jesus is more than the Messiah over Cambodia. So pray about everything. After saying that as well, I do have to say, also, don't worry about it and chill out. Jesus is more the Messiah. He's the one that's one with God, and you're his sheep in his divine hands, and no one's going to snatch you out. Your own lack of prayers, or the temptations of the world, even the temptations that you fall into, none of that will snatch you out. But you've got to hold these two in balance. You need to pray like Jesus wants you to pray. Pray like Jesus is more than the Messiah of you. But you also need to just chill out. He's God, he's God. And lastly, I guess if you're not a follower of God already, if you've not heard his voice and not followed, then you've got a simple choice to make. Today, you've heard his voice. He's said clearly who he is. He is the Messiah, but he's more than the Messiah. He's the one that is one with God. So today you've heard his voice and you've got a choice. You can follow him and receive eternal life and never death and never be snatched out of his hand. Or you can keep chasing after the Messiah that you want. So you've heard his voice. You choose to follow him or not.